Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. By the way, just to follow up a little bit on the confusion earlier on what the House bill that restricts funding to NPR actually requires stations like us to do. We checked with the media mavens at On the Media, and their understanding is the same as mine was, and that is it is highly restrictive to stations. Not only wouldn't we be allowed under this bill to buy programming from NPR, because they're really out to stop funding to NPR with this at its core, we wouldn't be allowed to use federal funds to buy programming from any outside source. So that includes non-NPR distributors like American Public Media and Public Radio International, non-NPR programs like Marketplace, This American Life. We produce Radiolab and other stations purchase it. They couldn't use federal funds for that. Prairie Home Companion, non-NPR national programming, et cetera. So if this were to pass the Senate and be signed by the president, both of which are considered extremely doubtful, those restrictions at that level would apply to NPR member stations, just clearing up the confusion. Now, New York Times readers have reason to be confused today as you pick through all the options in the new paywall announced by the paper yesterday for online content. It's already in effect in Canada, and the rest of the world will see it starting March 28th. The goal is to effectively keep the website's 30 million monthly readers coming back to the site, whether they are loyal or casual visitors. So here are the basics. Anyone can read 20 articles a month without paying. If you pay for a home delivery of a physical paper, you automatically get access to everything. Otherwise, actually, I think you have to register for it, but you will have access to everything. Otherwise, there are different packages, whether you're a mobile phone or iPad user or both. And if you follow a link through Google, let's say a Google News article, the free article limit is different. If you follow a link through social media, like Facebook or Twitter, there's no limit. Confused yet? We have some help from Bloomberg reporter Brett Pulley and Media Post columnist Catherine Taylor. They'll help us look at the plan and show us where the holes are. Brett, Kathy, welcome to WNYC.
Good to be here.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Let's see. Why don't we jump right in with the difference between getting to a Times article through Google News or anything else on Google through a link and getting there through social media like Facebook and Twitter. Who wants to explain that difference?
I guess I'll take a start at it. If you're getting to the Times through any social media vehicle, it could be a status update on Facebook, it could be a blog, you have unfettered access. It doesn't matter if you're past your 20 article limit. And Google, and my understanding is that you get five free stories per day, I believe, and so at a certain point there's a cutoff. But you know, if that happened to a lot of people, they might just go over to Bing and do it that way.
Well, right. I think the reason to offer some clarity, I think the reason for that, Brian, is that if people are referred from blogs or from social media, those are specific referrals that have to come to them with those links attached. This is really to close a loophole, and that loophole is, you can go to, remember, this thing will allow people to go to the home page and see everything. It will allow them to go to section fronts and see everything. So the loophole is that a person can go there, get the headline, and go to Google and put that in and get the link. So you could essentially, if they did not have that five-story limit, you could read the entire publication that way by going back and forth and getting those headlines and putting them in the search engine. So I think that's really why there's a distinction and why there is that limit where Google is concerned.
So, Kathy, getting back to social media, is how big a loophole is this? Like, I heard about somebody who registered as Free NYT on Twitter to provide free links to every article. Or what would stop me, as a New York Times subscriber, therefore I have access to it all, from just tweeting out the links to every major article every day?
I mean, the fact is there's nothing to stop you. I think the main thing that might stop a person is time. It would take a lot of time to do that, but, you know, there will be people who will do that. On the other hand, they kind of have to keep the social media piece alive, both because it obviously drives a lot of traffic, but also if you're thinking of the position of a blogger, you really think twice before you link to things that are going to, you know, send people into a firewall. I mean, you just don't want to be doing that. And that means that you're not as much a part of the conversation as a media property as you could be. And they have to guard against that, even if it hurts the revenue that they'll get from this plan.
Now, Brett, if somebody is a New York Times subscriber to the print edition, even just part of the week, like their Friday, Saturday, Sunday package, the web stays totally free?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, even if you're a subscriber to Sunday only, for example,
they have that option.
You get complete access, and of course, as you saw with the pay plan yesterday, which, as you pointed out, I think probably is a bit confusing. There are all these different levels. The pay plan says that if a person wants to access the publication across all platforms, they can pay $35 to do that. Well, you know, to get Sunday home delivery, Sunday only is probably right in that range, and in fact less during the initial discounted period. But I would imagine they've kind of done the math, and it kind of comes out in the wash where a person, you know, who takes Sunday only gets access to all those platforms. And then, of course, it's not the worst thing in the world if they, as a result of this, were to significantly enhance circulation for their Sunday print edition, which, you know, advertisers covet.
Indeed. And if you're not a print subscriber, then some of the details are $15, let's see, sorry, it's $15 for a four-week online subscription, which
plus the smartphone app,
Includes a mobile phone app, or $20 for 4 weeks of web plus iPad. So iPad's in a different category than iPhone, right?
It's a different category. You know, I think the overriding point here, Brian, is, you know, which is so well underscored by the fact that we're going through all these explanations of it, is that it is a bit confusing, and it's like they've put a pricing model, as someone said to me, in place that's more like the phone company instead of like Apple and iTunes, which is, you know, a flat 99 cents. And, you know, and they probably bear the risk here that consumers a lot of times are skeptical of things that feel like price discrimination. I think for consumers, the newspaper is the newspaper, and that's what they want access to, and they want it on all these various platforms and all these various devices that they're accumulating.
Right, but the Times does so much. And people who are consuming news probably wind up there, even if they're not, you know, print subscribers or looking for a Times article, so much for print, for video, for audio sometimes, that I think the Times thinking must be that by giving the first 20 free, that people will come to realize just how much they depend on New York Times content, even if they don't realize it, and then they will take out that subscription because it's worth it to them. Yes?
Yeah. I think that's part of it. And also, in a sense, those 20 free articles serve as a promotional tool, as do the kind of unfettered social media links. But, of course, the big unanswered question is, you know, how much do people value this? You know, unfortunately, we've taught everybody that, you know, content online is free. And so to start charging is a really difficult thing. I mean, one thing to keep in mind is this is all very complex, but it's taken them more than a year to get this together. And
It's part of a larger transition where the old business models for journalism are breaking down. We all know that. The old ethic that everything on the web should be free may not be as strong as it used to be. And as a survival mechanism, the Times and probably a lot of other old media organizations are going to start seeing if they can make charging work online, right?
Right. I mean, they have to find new revenue streams. And I think, you know, the thing about the 20 free is it's also important because, remember, last month the Times had 48 million unique visitors to NewYorkTimes.com. That's one of the most widely visited websites in the world. And what they don't want to do is to turn those visitors away for a couple of reasons. One, they monetize those visitors with advertising. But two, and this is really important and unique to the New York Times, and is that they want to remain a part of the global conversation.
And we are out of time, but there it is, folks, the basics on the new York Times paywall from Brett Pulley, from Bloomberg, and Media Post columnist Catherine Taylor. Thank you both so much.